Hello, everybody, and welcome to another E5 podcast. We're back, boys. 7 months. I'm your host, Paul Meenan, and I am joined, as always, by my tag team partners. Chaps, introduce yourselves.
Hello, I'm JW.
It's Dave Watts here, Sparky Ninja.
Hey everyone, Dan Jackson here.
The evangelical Dan Jackson has joined us. Apologies, we haven't done one of these in ages. Like ages, 7 months. But we did say that we would only do them if there was something to talk about. And my God, over the last 7 months, have we built a collection of stuff that involves ridiculous reams of research to even begin to fathom it before we can talk about it. So thank you for joining me, chaps, and apologies for our absence. Before we go on into today's subject, should we tell everyone what we've been doing? I don't know about you lot, but I've been working 12 to 14-hour days, 6 to 7 days a week, and life is madly busy. How are you guys, John?
Busy, lots of things doing, not making videos, but plenty of other stuff.
Be back with us, and we love you for it. So thank you very much, John. Dave, busy at all? Anything on the horizon? Doing anything?
taking over a building, opening up a training center in a month or so, developing the website, loads of stuff, 6 day weeks for the past 3 or 4 months. And then, yeah, all evenings spent in Discord servers and other places as well, just 12, 13-hour days. But this is good though. I mean, we have, as you say, we've been silent, but we've actually been learning and then learning more and then learning more and then referencing and then going back and learning more, building up a huge amount of things to talk about. And it's now at the time where we're kind of bursting at the seams of things we need to get
Yeah,
discussions on. So.
someone's phone's bleeping consistently. That's
sorry,
probably Dan's
that's me. I'll turn it
part
off.
timer that is Dan Jackson. So Dan, you have the light of the Lord on you. What have you been doing for the last 7 months or since we did our last thing together?
Has it really been that long? 7 months?
Well, 7 months since the last podcast. But I know you were on the amendment too, so it literally is. Yeah, it's about 6 7 months because the last thing we did together was the amendment two webinars. But yeah. You did the second Amendment 2 webinar. Remember we talked about
I was
privacy
on it.
collapse and
Yeah, I
all
mean,
that.
I've been really busy, really, really busy. Really,
You have.
involved in some really good stuff at work. And also just self-study, like Dave said, really. I spent a lot of my time just reading technical documents about all sorts of topics.
Well, that's not all you've been doing because technically you're going to be a dad again soon, so.
Yeah, I've got a kid on the way.
Another
So
mini you. Congratulations.
thank you very much.
Awesome. Right, so we'll get into, I suppose, the subject matter. Dave, I think you nailed it on the head. And by the way, congratulations on the Spark and Ninja Academy or whatever you're going to train call it. You're right, we have been, I mean, last Friday, I think it's fair to say that we spent hours reviewing rabbit holes that we found and delving down technical subject matter and just, when your brain starts eking out of your ear, you've got to stop and do a podcast with your mates. So let's get on with it. So today's one, we are going to talk about something which has been, I think it's fair to say, in the news, because we're in this weird world at the moment, a weird world where all our energy, electricity and gas bills are going up. And I've done quite a lot of Amendment 2 talks in the last couple of months. Switch your phone off. And those Amendment 2 talks, I've done them for Paul Skirm, my beloved Paul Skirm in Swansea. I've done them in Swindon. And Ofgem kept getting mentioned, and the cost of a living crisis is in, like with COVID, that was the thing to talk about. Now we're in a cost of living crisis. It's fair to say that we're constantly getting emails from our suppliers saying your gas is going up, your electricity is going up. I personally don't think I'm an idiot, but when we've spent the last 10 years reducing our energy loads to virtually nothing using LED and switch mode power supplies, and yet our bills are still going up, you do have to wonder, where's it all going? So what I thought we'd do is in part of our research for DNOs and all the rest of it, it's a huge labyrinth. We all know what a DNO is. Then we introduced the term DSO, and we've got IDNO and ICPs, and then you look above that and you look towards National Grid and you hear there's National Grid ESO and TSO and all these different independent companies. It becomes a bit of a mess. And then maybe you start to think, is our industry in a bit of a mess? And I assumed because of TV that Ofgem are our industry regulator. So we're going to talk about Ofgem. It's on the screen. They are officially the Office of Gas and Electricity Markets, and they are the energy regulator for Britain. What that is down to your own research. But for me, it's raised a number of questions. So in between being busy and being busy, I thought I'd ask a few questions. And one of the great things about living in a democratic world is, especially in the UK, we can do something called a Freedom of Information request. Now, if anyone listening or watching wants to do it, the website is, or one of the websites you can use that is free, is www.whatdotheyknow.com. And if you go on there, you can create an account and you can ask any request of anything or anyone, and they will process it for you. And they have nearly 900,000 Freedom of Information requests on their public accessible database. So it's a really, really good tool if you want to ask some very professional and probing questions. They seem to be the things that make the headlines on the newspapers.
Do you have to use a website like this, or can you just contact?
Well, if you wish to, good sir, you can turn around and type on your gentleman's typewriter, an old-fashioned communication, and you can send the king's stamps and do it the old-fashioned way. But you must insist that they respond via a typed letter. You don't have to, mate, but I mean, you can have a website do it all for you, or you can do it the old-fashioned way. But we'll get into that. So I sent a Freedom of Information request. I sent two, and there was multiple questions in it because it kind of wound me up a little bit. So what I was going to do is I was just going to kind of share that with you guys, if that's okay. So I'm going to drag the letter onto the screen. Hopefully you can see the letter being dragged onto the screen. And for those listening, we will read it out. So I sent a Freedom of Information request. You can actually email directly to Ofgem at information.rights@ofgem.gov.uk. Sent it in January. All the information is on the screen, so you can read this at your own perusal. And the point of this is we're going to have a chat about this now. So we always said that we would only do podcasts with something to talk about and debate, because this is an engineering debate podcast for anyone in the electrical industry. So I wanted to just clear through some of the muck, because we have a lot of people in our industry going, the industry regulator, the industry governance.
Thing is, mate, it happens all the time when you speak to a body or an entity. If they have a higher, if they have a higher peer or higher company that's supposed to govern, regulate, control them, they'll often just throw it in that direction. It's the same in like the training sector, where we go down the avenue of, with awarding bodies and UCAS and stuff. And so what you've done here is everyone uses Ofgem or refers to being regulated by Ofgem. So you've clearly just wanted to go straight to them.
Yeah, and this is the thing. It was one of the frustrating things that I wanted to go and do the piece of work and then share it publicly. And we've done lots of work. We've done lots of research. And in time, we'll share all of it publicly once we've kind of understood it and digested it, I suppose. And hopefully people can use it then to further that research, because you can write research in a white paper and that's all great and dandy. But this is a modern medium to be able to share that research. Hopefully people who've watched our webinars can realize that some of it's fun, some of it's research. So I started asking on the email that I sent on the 3rd of January. It was New Year. And I basically just sent them an email with five questions. And they were very simple. First one was, do you regulate the DNOs or DSOs, as we call? And I said, I assume, yes, you do. So their response was, and I'll make sure this fits on the screen so that people can read it if they're looking at the screen, was, yes, Ofgem works with government, industry and consumer groups to enable competition and innovation, which drives down prices and results in new products and services for consumers at the lowest cost to consumers. Okay, so yes, you regulate it, but that just is more about stakeholdery and cost. So that was the first thing that made me go, actually, you're more about the financial side. And I think most people now, with the cost of living crisis and the energy crisis, realize that Ofgem, they kind of set market costs, or they set this cap, which has all gone basically belly up. So we're not in a good place at the moment for anyone's electricity or gas bill. So continue down that road of and my next question was, do you have any oversight on electrical installers and contractors? And if not, why not? because there's a presumption of they regulate the industry. I didn't want to go back and forth like a tennis ball, so I thought I'd ask a series of questions. And their response to that question was, no, Ofgem does not oversee electrical contractors or installers. It does not fall under Ofgem's responsibility. Potentially, the ECA can be a reliable source in this matter and other electrical contractors' issues. So they are Ofgem thinking that the ECA are a regulator? They're a trade association. Yeah. Have we made it deliberately that confusing?
It's at the point where it's the same thing where you have ministers who have to make decisions and stuff. They'll just turn to the trade bodies or the industry's own bodies, own entities.
Yeah.
They'll look at the hierarchy. They'll go to the top of the hierarchy and they'll go, I'll have that one. And they'll point to that one.
Yeah, you've got a good logo. Lots of people have joined you. They're following you.
Yeah. And they'll literally say, you sort your own industry out.
Exactly. Yeah, it's exactly what the ministers did with Part P years ago.
Yep.
You know, when the committee were actually asking the right questions, getting to the right points, the guy just turned around, listened to the trade instead.
I am actually meeting Clive Betts in 2 weeks, so I'm looking forward to that. Not that I'm going to ask him about Part P in any way, shape, or form. No. Promise. Yeah. So the third question going on. Do you collect data when a DNO is not fulfilling its duties? They've told me it regulates. Great. So this by accident is a logical series of questions. So I asked, do you collect data when a DNO is not fulfilling duties like compliance with ESQCR? So Electricity Supplier Quality Continuity Regs, published in 2002. So Ofgem's response was no. So question one was, do you regulate the DNOs? Yes. Do you collect data on any of their not filling duties? No. They then go on to say the enforcement of ESQCR is oversight by the HSE. I see a little bit of what we're doing here. We'll get on to that. Number four, do you publish guidance on technical issues like diverted neutral current? You can see I've been digging this street up for a while, which is a growing phenomena. And they've wrote no in response four. Ofgem is not an authority in charge of the publication of guidance on technical issues. I want you to remember that. Potentially, the Energy Networks Association can be a reliable source in this matter and other technical issues. Now, I have, just from Googling, a letter from Ofgem to the Wiring Regulations Committee telling them to change the wiring regs. That confuses me. And that response is contrary to the evidence you can Google. Okay, you can just get it off Google. So number five, the last question, and the most important one on everyone's lips, what are Ofgem's views on competency in the electrical industry? You know, meter guys, anyone who works on electrical systems. And number five was responded as such. I'll do it in a voice. Ofgem does not hold views beyond enabling competition and innovation in the electrical industry. Ofgem's role is to protect consumers now and in the future by working to deliver a greener, fairer energy system. Now, when they wrote that in January, that sounded fantastic. But given the state of our electricity bills, I don't think it's working. So they don't have views on competency. I would love to see Ofgem come back and say, we only employ the most competent people. We seek expert advice across the industry, stakeholder groups and from peers. We have the best commercial management teams in the country, et cetera, et cetera. At the moment, my electricity bill strongly disagrees. So that was the first one, which was great. And, you know, they then tell you, well, you can, you know, you if you want to complain or come back, you absolutely can do. You have that right. So, of course, what did I do? Hang on 1 second. I'll get the next one on the screen. And then we will discuss the rest. So this one, next one's a little bit longer. And this is, again, another freedom of information. So I got the response and I emailed them again at the end of January because I wasn't really satisfied with those answers to the questions. So in my email, which they have lovingly reprinted in the letter, I forgive my typos and terrible spelling. I was a bit frustrated when I wrote it. So I put, as in the same principle, five questions. I responded, and I've put in number one, you have said yes to the queer and regulating the DNOs, but your remaining answer talks about stakeholder working. So I asked then, to what extent do you regulate the DNOs? So I'm driving down. Is it commercially, sustainably, or do you look at the safety of DNOs? Okay, so that's what I did. I clarified the question. And their response was, we do regulate the DNOs in the UK. Our purpose, role, and responsibilities are clearly set out on our website. I provided you the link. Great. And the roles and responsibilities are very, very clearly put on their website. Who are we? Britain's independent energy regulator, responsible for working with government, industry, and consumer groups, stamping out sharp and bad practice, ensuring fair treatment for consumers, especially the vulnerable, enabling competition and innovation. Yeah, and they report directly to Parliament. So, So it hasn't really answered, and it's more commercial. They then finish it off with, the HSE set the legal requirements for the safety of substations that network companies must comply with. The government body, this government body is responsible for monitoring compliance with these obligations where appropriate, can take enforcement action in case of non-compliance. Any safety concerns regarding network company assets to any individual suspect may pose a risk should be reported to HSE. You can contact them directly, and if you want to email them, information request at hse.gov.uk. It's a bit weird, really. So they've answered question one with, here's our website, we're not going to tell you anymore, and speak to the HSE if you've got any other questions. So it's a bit of a woolly, we do regulate the DNOs, but mainly on commercial competition and fairness. And but well, you can give us your own opinions on that in a minute, boys. Number two, I responded, the ECA is a trade association and does not regulate electricians, although Select are trying, good luck to them, nor contractors. They are a pay-to-join membership entity. They own other electrical bodies like NIC, GIB, Select. These bodies have no legal standing. If anything, they do market as a voluntary regulatory body in some parts of the wider business. They have not responded to number two at all. They will only speak to stakeholders, industry stakeholders. So there you go. So we moved on to three, and I said, you've said compliance of ESQCR, yet HSE only get involved when an accident occurs. Please provide clarity on this, as if you said yes in question one, that you regulate DNOs, but now you do not. Which is it? So I've challenged them on that. And their response to number three was, reprieve request. The question was, do you collect data and a DNO is not fulfilling its duties? Within our response, we stated the enforcement of ESQCR is overseen by HSE. You had specifically asked if Ofgem collects data on DNO not fulfilling duties of ESQCR. We do not collect that data. So they don't regulate the industry. They just partially regulate the money bit. The the Health and Safety Regulations UK are regulated by HSE. Please refer to question one for our regulatory remit. So just go and read our website, effectively. But what I'm trying to do is ask them the direct question of, is there any links or engagement to the electrical installation or contracting industries?
So on their website, when they say bad practices, are they suggesting bad practices with regards to money and charging and costs to client, to customers?
Glad you asked that, because there are reports. There's a lot of transparency documentation on Ofgem's website, and there are letters that have been written to Ofgem regarding conflicts of interest and removing conflicts of interest from DNOs. Not from Ofgem, but there are letters from Ofgem to DNOs saying, please remove your conflicts of interest. So if you do have any interest in understanding how the industry is regulated, it's well worth looking into Ofgem and their website and the information available. It is a labyrinth, Dave and boys, as you can imagine, of just documents and the usual stuff. We'll chuck it in a room, you go and filter through it. So number four, I've told them straight, I've challenged them. I've said, Ofgem have in the past written to publishers of industry guidance like the IET wine regulations and asked them for them to be changed. Example, when ENG 12-4 was changed in January 2014, Ofgem wrote and instigated proposals to update the wine regs via a working group with the ENA. I have that letter. Anyone can Google it. So I've challenged them. I've called them out on it. And guess what response I got?
Oh, God.
That was the response. Nothing.
Oh, you got nothing?
Nope. Totally ignored that part of the question. Because basically what I've done is called them out as you've kind of lied to me in a freedom of information. Because there are the evidence is there. They have influenced the wine rigs. So I would question quite a few of the systems and FOIs.
Thing is, they're being very literate, because obviously the way you worded that in number four, there's like no question mark or there's no question within it at the end.
Yeah.
You're stating something. So they'll skip past that, even though what you're saying needs valid looking into and understanding, mm-hmm. because you've not actually said, could you explain this or question mark with it? They've gone, oh. And they've probably just ignored it.
Good point.
You know, same with
that's
probably number two.
Really bad English.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I was, yeah. No, that's
it, it's the point. I mean, if they can see you want to understand something, but they've chosen to actually ignore you. Not seek clarity in your question, not ask you to, you know, they just ignored it completely, even though it's a sign that does serve a purpose.
Last one was I responded to them and said, appreciate the need for a greener, fairer energy system, but what about safe? Safety of the consumer or homeowners. Surely whatever we do must be. I put, what is ENA's view or stance on the approach to electrical safety, given the Dame Judith Hackett? So at the time, I wasn't sure what their relationship and intertwined with the ENA was. So I wanted to delve into that a little bit.
Well, it's challenging when they keep kind of shaking hands with each other or referencing each other, you know.
Oh, yes. They're very pally pally, and they all work. They're all key stakeholders of each other. So I've put, obviously, what's the approach to electrical safety, given Dame Judith Hackett's review of the need for competency, is disappointing to see the response. Surely you as an independent entity must ensure your people are competent and those who provide oversight ensure it. Mm-hmm. And so what they did was they then went to, where is it, number five? You have asked, what is the ENA's view or stance on approach to electrical industry safety? We are unable to comment on behalf of the Energy Network Association. You may wish to contact them directly. I have tried. I think Energy Networks, and then business as usual for questions two and four. We have determined your inquiry does not fall within the definition of a valid request. Maybe that's my wording. However, in order to provide as much assistance, we have provided assistance as part of our normal course of business. On question two, they've put following on from our response where we disclosed Ofgem does not oversee electrical incident contractors. We are unable to provide further information. So they've just closed it off.
Is there any business on four?
I'm just trying to see. As previously explained, Ofgem is not a technical authority that publishes technical guidance. Ofgem does have a collaborative working relationship with various distribution and transmission technical authorities, and it is often appraised of upcoming changes to relevant publications that may affect the company's IPT.
But if you said it was Ofgem that pushed the change, or was it the ENA
that pushed Ofgem the change? Pushed the change.
So the ENA did the work, and then what, they used Ofgem as the hammer?
Yes. No, Ofgem wrote in a letter to them, we've reviewed this.
Right.
You may wish to look at the...
But what were they written? I mean, what technical authority do they have to know what to write and who to write to?
Well,
you know?
That's exactly why I asked I've asked this question multiple times of multiple people, because it was swimming pool regulations. It was to do with earthing of swimming pools and all that sort of stuff. And that's why I quoted the date and everything. I was trying to probe who in Ofgem is technical. Mm. Where is this technical person? So that was kind of it, really. That was the letter.
It looks like, I mean, it's technical Teflon, isn't it? They're just basically trying to not take any ownership to any technical accountability for safety from that.
Yeah. So I was kind of really looking for your views and opinions on what do you think Ofgem brings to the table? You've seen the website by now. You've seen the letter. John, what do you think?
Well, in terms of safety and all the rest of it, they bring nothing. Because if you look on their website, there's a couple of bits which are of particular relevance here. And it says, we regulate only where necessary to protect consumers' interests. And we carry out investigations into company behaviour where we believe they may have breached the condition of their licence or the requirements of consumer protection or competition legislation. So it seems all that they do is cover things like pricing. Are companies sort of getting backhanders from somebody else and charging too much? And are they doing what they're supposed to do as set out in their licence terms? And that is pretty much it. So in terms of safety, competence, all the rest of it, they appear to be completely unrelated to those things.
Dan, what do you think?
I'm reading the About Us page on their website, and, you know, our role and responsibilities. And I don't think it's that clear at all. It's not easily read. And it's a lot about the green, you know, environmental and net zero strategy, which, you know, is important, but it doesn't really explain how they regulate. And it's, to me as a consumer, it's not really clear. And they said to you that they do regulate the DNOs. But again, where it talks about their roles and responsibilities, it doesn't mention any of that, nothing at all. It just says they work to protect energy consumers, especially vulnerable people, to make sure that they're treated fairly and benefit from a cleaner, greener environment. So what do they do?
Maybe this is why John is sitting in a gas cupboard. The cost of living, he's staying warm by sitting in a gas cupboard. Dave, what's your thoughts on it? Because I've got this G12 letter. I'm going to share it now in a minute.
I mean, the key word, I think, in there is markets. It's all about regulating the marketplace. The old safety of how it gets to the marketplace is clearly not on their table. ENA, maybe, and they kind of buddy up and push things for the ENA, but doesn't appear that they have any kind of any reason to take any accountability for the safety of the distribution systems, from what I can see here.
Yeah, no, I agree. So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to share my screen quickly. And while you were talking and stalling for me, I've managed to find the letter. So hopefully you can all see my screen or hear, because I will read through key parts. So this is January 2014. It's a few years ago now, 8 years before I wrote my letter. And this was the distribution code engineering G12-4. In case anybody's wondering, G12-4 is on issue 2 at the moment. And it's got quite a lot of interesting stuff. It's the document that talks about EV chargers and there. You don't really might want to reconsider the use of open devices and technology. So it's that controversial bad boy. Now, if you remember in that letter, they very clearly said they don't really influence technical anything. So this is a modification proposal letter to G12 from Ofgem. Okay. Yep. So this contradicts what they've told me. And this is to all DNOs, because they're stakeholders, but they don't have oversight. Well, they do have oversight, but they don't have oversight. Anyway.
So what, I mean, why wasn't this just written by the ENA instead?
Well, this was basically an instruction to the ENA, wasn't it?
Right.
Gotcha. So they basically said, background to the change, electricity license holders, blah, 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 blah. They have a duty and license holder to review and seek our approval for modification to distribution code. So it says there, Ofgem, the networks have to seek Ofgem approval to the distribution code. Okay. Through the distribution code review panel. The Energy Networks Association Engineering Recommendation G12 provides recommendations for the application of PME to low voltage networks. It also contains a situation when PME should not normally be used. And yet I've got emails from DNO saying you might as well consider it everywhere. This is 8 years old. Mm-hmm. So it's referred to, I'm just trying to read. Therefore, any change to this engineering recommendation constitutes a change to the distribution code and has to be approved by us. So Ofgem obviously hold the keys to the distribution code for the UK. Very high level oversight of, I think it's called the D-code now. Yeah, the abbreviation is D-code, which ENA follow. It's like the highest thing for the ENA to follow. And then the UKPN guys and network operators develop standards. So the current version, G12-3 came into effect 95. We're on G12-4 issue 2 now anyway. So a little bit away from that over the last 8 years, but you can see there they have done a review of engineering recommendation G12 against this D code, and they've put a number of developments have led to DNOs identifying the need to review and update G12. That includes replacement of ESQCR 2002, revision of the IET wiring regulations, and the development of new European standards to address some extent of earthing issues. Okay. In addition, since 2008, the lack of guidance in ERG 12 in relation to provision of low voltage supplies to traction railways, Dan, has led to different interpretations. Now, we know from our research that there are loads and loads of British and European standards out there, and there are tons of conflicting statements because one committee does another thing. They're all out of sync, and you will get conflicts when you start reading standards. Mm-hmm. But let's just skip through the waffle of the actual document. It talks about, you know, clearer guidance for providing low voltage to PME to network rail and traction, taking into account the requirements of European standards 50122, update the guidance on providing PME, review and update the remaining technical content of the document, bearing in mind the updated wiring regs. Okay. So let's just skip all the way through. There's links to the D code and all that sort of stuff, so you can find lots of good stuff. And then what we do is we get all the way through is to the decision, and then they have a little annex at the end of the report. Ofgem's proposed changes. So the annex is their like note on you might want to do this. So the working group considered all the points raised below and has made changes to the ERG 12 to address them. Protective neutral bonding. So stuff that we're hearing about now, they've been talking about for nearly 10 years, if not longer. It is suggested in order to avoid misunderstandings, the section should have maximum number of customers' installations and distance between common point of the customers' installations and supply substation. It talks about S&E installations. There is a concern that by giving a fixed maximum earth electrode resistance value of 20 ohm, this is taken as the default value and the rising potential is not calculated and proved to be safe. Why would someone in Ofgem write this level of...
Is there a name of the individual who's written this?
No.
It's just from Ofgem.
It is not clear that 20 ohm value is an appropriate default value. 7430 is in virtually every ENA standard, and I'm pretty sure it's in 7430. Mm-hmm. If I remember rightly reading G12, the reason they use 20 ohms for soil resistance is they believe that step voltage is managed if you have below 20 ohms. Anything over that, and no, it's over 200 ohms, it's step voltages are a problem. Anything below 20 ohms, you've got a reasonable chance the network will disconnect, which is why I believe I said to you guys privately that I think eventually, if the networks keep failing, we may potentially have the DNOs coming out and going, unless it's below 20 ohms, I don't care. For the consumer to fix. But don't worry about it, because our wiring rigs have been changed to ensure we have supplementary electrodes. Weirdly enough, and guess who made that proposal in the wiring regulations, who sits on the committee?
ENA.
Yeah. So this is influencing us and our jobs and our contracting businesses and our customers. So, but anyway, just carrying on. It is therefore suggested it may be appropriate to leave the wording to sufficient to limit the rise of potential under open circuit neutral conditions rather than suggest a value. So you can see the wording is very, I'm not going to use the words, but I'll leave you to make your own mind up. And then there's a swimming pool section. There is concern about conflict with BS 7671, which deals very thoroughly with this issue. Suggest the appropriate section of 7671 is referenced here rather than summarized. Additional recommendations, labeling a PME, a correction clarification, the reintroduction of the option for TNS earthing at the construction site, via an earthing transformer. So why are these guys taking 7671 and making recommendations for change when they've got nothing to do with technical stuff? This confuses me. Obviously, it's a labyrinth. The networks is a labyrinth. I used to work for EDF, by the way, but this is a labyrinth of complexities. And I could Freedom of Information request this more and more and more and more, but I just don't see them as an industry regulator at all. I don't know what you guys think, but they're not an industry regulator. My electricity bill says that whatever they're doing, they're not doing sufficiently, and that's my personal opinion. Just to be clear, I'm sure we could use more words and
their responses. The responses to your request suggests that they are taking a distance from any accountability for safety regulation, more, you know, market and consumer regulation. But that letter does suggest that they have some level of technical authority. maybe they were acting as a chair on a body or a group like the ENA was sitting on. Their name on top to push it in. I don't know.
I am sure there are lots and lots of stakeholder groups that are involved, and they all do a wonderful job, and the individuals push in their own way for the best options. Technically, I am personally, I've said this before, and I've said this on our Amendment 2 stuff, the electrode for installers is like having their rubbish thrown over our fence. Mm-hmm. Let the contractor, let the consumer deal with it. 1102, I've said it before, I'll say it again, 1102 in 7671, what's not included, D&O equipment. So I'm going to say something, and you can laugh at those listening or watching. Why was Eddie testing? Why are we putting a supplementary electrode in, recommended by a network? We shouldn't have a say. And also, why are we using open pen technology to monitor upstream? I'd love someone to explain that to me. I really would. I'm not trying to be facetious or awkward or difficult, but seriously, can somebody please give further clarity? I know we have to do ZE because we have to guarantee the impedances and the disconnection and safety of our networks, but can anybody else see the weird irony in this?
Yeah, there's irony in the maximums. You know, those maximums aren't actually those maximums anymore, are they?
Think about it, Dave. 1667. If your ZE is 1.2 ohms, don't matter. 20 ohms, 1667 in your final circuit. Great success.
If your RCD is working, yeah.
If your RCD isn't conflicting, blinded, shocked, stunned. John, what do you think?
Well, this thing that they, I mean, in those responses, they obviously said they don't have any kind of technical oversight at all and all the rest of it. And yet on that Decode website, if you just do a search there, you can find hundreds of documents, all which mention Ofgem and all which are concerning changes to the distribution code. So they are heavily involved in all of the changes that are made to it. Why they haven't told you this is something of a mystery. And so they're all freely available on there. You can just go and search them anytime. And this goes back for years and years. So pretty much any change to the distribution code has to be approved by Ofgem, which means they must have a significant level of technical oversight in it, because otherwise they can't just say, yes, carry on regardless, because they must have a considerable technical knowledge to actually confirm that the changes that they're approving are actually sensible and suitable to actually go in there.
So they're
definitely involved extensively.
I've got there, and the beautiful thing about their transparency, they have a really great transparency policy, by the way, it's worth looking at if you're interested in researching this. They have lots of directors. They have a board and all that, and you can actually see Ofgem and Delivered are broken up into a chair, a CEO. They have delivery and schemes section. They have corporate services, regulatory networks, regulatory energy systems management and security, regulatory enforcement and emerging issues, regulatory retail, analysis and assurance, strategy and decarbonisation, communications and general counsel. Now, they have quite a fair few staff just at that senior level of directorship. It's a big board, but I don't see anything which I can immediately go, that's technical assurance. That's a hell of a lot. I want to say so much more. I think most people do. You've only got to go on the national news to see people are suffering massively in regards to fuel poverty. And I really want to just let loose, and I'm not going to, because I don't want to get sued for saying what every single person in this country is thinking, but I don't actually know what they do. I think there is certainly a cloud of questions. And I will say that I genuinely do believe industry regulation for all the electrical networks needs to be better. I mean, I'm not being funny, but I don't see what was wrong with the electricity boards.
Well, I mean, bear in mind, you're talking there about, you know, costs, but I mean, we are obviously seeing much bigger issues just, you know, with regards to the data on broken neutrals and broken pens and stuff, you know, and there has to be some level of governance or industry control over this.
Yeah, I completely agree. And even the, I'm just looking for the data now, actually, on the broken pens, one second, because we included it in our
did, yeah.
Two presentations. Did we do it in our one which we did on YouTube?
You may have done it in the latest one. I know that we've recently added the broken pens.
So 474 broken pens in 2021. And that was from the last Freedom of Information request, which was done just the 1st of March, 2022. And in this year alone, in basically the first 2 months of the year, there was 68, which if you work that out, you're on target to break 474.
Trends there, isn't it?
There is a trend. I believe that there was some people in the industry who tried to get more up-to-date stats, and I believe that that isn't available anymore.
So who regulates that? Is it the ENA? I mean,
HSE.
They've just pushed in your freedom to the HSE.
But how, yeah, so this,
what can the HSE do other than be reactive?
Well, and this is the thing. Just remember, the HSE, the broken neutral reports come from, if you go on their website, there is a form for reporting broken neutrals or loss of neutrals. That's where these stats come from. Now, unless you know it exists, when are you ever going to fill it in?
It's going to be reactive all the time, isn't it?
But is it the network doing it? Because let's be perfectly frank. Why would the network throw themselves under their regulator's bus?
That's true.
There's no incentive to, because if they do, they'll get penalised and their safety performance will be rubbish. They're better off just kind of brushing it under the carpet. Now, I've spoken to lots of UKPN guys, and I used to work in a company that was part of UKPN, and there are loads of these broken pens. The electricity network is aging. I am trying to get a UKPN person on this podcast. I'm not going to throw them under the bus. I just want to have a chat with them and say, look, what are the developments? What are you doing about it? What can electricians be aware of? How can we make our lives and our customers' lives safer?
Mm-hmm.
How can we be safer at work? That's my goal, is just enhance the safety and visibility, because I don't think we'll ever be able to fix it. But it's something we need to learn.
Making people more aware helps fix it, though.
It does.
Helps control risk.
Yeah. Yes, it does. So yeah, Ofgem, I think if I was to be really polite, thumbs up or thumbs down, because I'm giving them a thumbs down. And I'm being very polite here now.
Yeah. Well, I think the problem is that everyone assumes that they do all of this stuff, but then in reality, they don't do most of the stuff that people assume that they do. It's primarily the competition and are you working properly with your license sort of thing, rather than any specific safety or sort of oversight of what's actually going on.
I mean, the reply, I mean, Paul's questions have clearly been pretty on point as to the angle of approach. You know, I'm worried about electrical safety, I'm concerned about electrical safety, and I want some answers about electrical safety. To respond like they have with regards to the ECA mention, it's a very non-committed response. You know, just to say, oh, the ECA, it doesn't in any way give you confidence, you know, in what they claim they're doing.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't. And it shows that maybe their perception of industry is not what everyone else thinks. I was kind of hoping they would say yes. And here's this vault with tons of knowledge and information. But it seems to be quite tough to try and crack behind the door of the industry. But I think it's fair to say, Dave, the more we've researched over the last couple of months, the more that we do have to question some of the decisions made on our behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that we really should have greater transparency across the industry. And we are in a world now where Skype, Zoom, online voting portals, I mean, wouldn't it be great if, you know, the industry could say on the next amendment that the regs say, here's the top 10 regs changes, vote for them.
Mm.
Vote for them. Go online and vote for them. Rather than say, give us your comments, no, vote on them.
Yeah. I mean, it's, if we can get other people thinking about doing this kind of research, then it'll be more essential for people to bring things to surface quicker. Because one of the things we find a lot is we find an issue and we look for it and then we dig. And we find ourselves digging and then we're still digging and we're going back in time. And often we'll find issues that surface today, but there's actually buried material from years ago on the exact same phenomenon and subject. But it's just kind of been handled and buried instead of actually being developed to the surface to actually, develop a method of work or approach that actually gets these things fixed before they surface or they get too much, too large in scale, where like with broken neutrals and stuff, the problem is just astronomical now.
But Dave, I think also the majority of people just want to do as they're told, and mm-hmm. they don't want to think, they just want to do.
And majority of people will, but then, think about the amount of people that are in committees or are, who claim to be representatives of our industry, who will know about things, and you'll speak to them, and then they'll say after the fact, this is it. But a lot of stuff is just kept quiet. Now, obviously, there's sensitive information in a lot of it. But we've seen a few things that we've discussed, and then all of a sudden, it's now discussed in a much wider demographic in our industry 2 or 3 months later, because we brought we started talking about things in the podcast, and suddenly more people are now motivated to talk about these things.
I think
it shows that having a voice is really important, because if you recognize there's an issue, you got to stand up and say, because if you don't, it just gets brushed under the carpet.
I think a lot of people with passion in our industry are deemed as militant or left wing or too aggressive, because maybe they don't have the ability to eloquently narrate their issues that the people wearing suits and ties and on six figure salaries want to hear. Maybe they're not perceived as collaborative. Let's be perfectly frank, we've all been in that bucket at some point. But the fact of the matter is electrical contracting and electrical installation is a trade that we all grew up in. And unfortunately, it's not a profession. It's a vocation. It's a trade. Naughty words are used. It's a bit rough and ready. There is a huge gap in the industry. And I would, as you rightly said, these and all the podcasts and everything else we're doing is, if it can help people want to go away and do more research, if there is a chief engineer at Ofgem who is willing to get in touch, I'm on LinkedIn, and wants to come on the podcast to discuss what Ofgem do as far as a technical contribution to society, please take this as an open invite. You're more than welcome to. I'd love to get these sorts of people on the podcast so that we can. I want to make sure that we're allowed to have our opinion, and it is only that. It's an opinion. We're not asking anyone to follow our considerations. Do your own research, and also go and get others' opinions and views on it. That's what healthy debate is about. But I'd love it if someone from the other side of the fence would come on and say, actually, I disagree with you. Great, because we're all grown up enough to respectfully agree and disagree with each other. So anyone from Ofgem who has listened to this or ever does, which they probably won't, but you're more than welcome to come on and discuss it with us, or maybe do some good comms that explain a little bit better to the shop floor electricians how you contribute, and because people are interested. It's like us, we're interested in the early editions of the wiring rigs. Why? You what?
Send the freedom of information, send this video, and then ask a question what they think of it so they can respond.
Ooh. That would be an interesting one, wouldn't it? Okay, so we're going to kind of end it there, really. So what I'm going to do is, before we do, I'm going to ask you chaps for your final thoughts, as always. Starting with Danny Boy.
To be honest, I had never sort of looked up much about Ofgem before we started talking about it. And
that's why you're invited in. Different view, different opinion. We form thoughts. Yeah.
And it's I'm gonna do some research. I just find it interesting. Because you in the media, you hear Ofgem, and you don't really understand the inner workings. And I think that's the case for a lot of things.
Well, I think we're interested in the technical inner workings. I think the other workings, the price cap and everything else, we can all agree, they're not having a good time at the moment.
Yeah, of course.
That's all I'm going to say. But yes, they do report to Parliament, so they must have some sway. I don't exactly know how all that works. It's quite a labyrinth on their website. But Dave, final thoughts?
Yeah. Clearly, the market point is the priority, the aim of what they do. we hear companies like, I mean, again, I can think of loads that I hear as kind of like the top tier company, the governance, the regulators and stuff. We hear it all the time, and we always make the assumption that they are the people in control. In our case, we're thinking more about the safety aspect. I think the example here shows that they probably do lean on the ENA and the ECA even for maybe the technical, but then when they actually get the result, they probably just publish it themselves with their name on. I expect they probably get some partners to do the actual work. You never know. It's important work. It's good. Don't know if it really is regulating the quality of the DNO's work. From the feedback that we've got there, I don't think it really is. As we say, with the HSE involvement is reactive, and so I'm not confident that there's effective regulation on the DNO or DSO.
JW.
Yeah, I mean, the real question is who regulates the electrical industry, and the answer is probably nobody. There's various bits that do a bit here and a bit there and somewhere else, but in terms of overall oversight, I don't think there is anybody. It's not Ofgem, and I don't think it's anybody else either. It's going to be down to the individual, say, DNOs for their own bits and what they do internally, and various other sections who do obviously things, but there's no joined up overall, certainly regulation for things like safety and quality and that sort of thing.
Fair enough. A few extra notes before we go. Ofgem do the gas networks as well, by the way. And if anybody is interested in researching and going down this rabbit hole a bit more, if you live in the southeast, UKPN publish a 5-year business plan, and it's called RIIO/ED2. If you just Google UKPN business plans 2023 to 2028, you will find dozens and dozens of documents all about how they manage the network, how they're not managing the network, how they need to invest money, why they need to invest. So it's that transparency behind the DNOs. There is a network losses strategy. Maybe we'll talk about that in an upcoming podcast. Speaking of upcoming podcasts, that's pretty much it from us. But we will be back because we are going to be talking about battery energy storage systems. We're going to be talking about what may be coming in Amendment 3, AFDDs. We're going to do something on some bits on engineering logic, a bit more on broken pen, EV, RCDs. That's going to be a marathon. And a few other bits and bobs in between, just to share our thoughts and our research for your entertainment, enjoyment, or further onward quests for excellence in your knowledge. Other than that, thank you very much for watching. Thank you very much for listening. And until the next one, take care of yourself and each other. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.